kinds of cardboard boxes.
What's in the box?
It loses its value if you take it out of the package.
Hey, PDU crew, happy new year. It's 2022, and we're moving into season two of Package Design Unboxed. This year, we're focusing on the art of package design, the processes behind the design, and really just learning how to design packaging across medium industries and design styles. So if we're going to be learning about packaging design, why not start with somebody that's been teaching packaging design at Fashion Institute of Technology in New York, or FIT, as the cool kids call it. And he also teaches packaging design at Parsons School of Design. Not sure what the cool kids call Parsons. But I'm super excited because today we're speaking with Aaron Brashear. He's a longtime freelance designer and instructor. We're going to get into a ton of different things. We're going to discuss the future of packaging education. We're going to discuss packaging trends for 2022 all the way through 2025. We're also going to talk about what tools packaging designers actually need, what software is out there, what's coming down the pike, and what you should be looking out for. And we're even going to discuss how to become a freelance designer. Now, you're going to get all of that and a ton more as we dive into the future of package design education. I want to take a quick second before we jump into the episode, and I just want to thank you so much for supporting the podcast. We had a great year last year. We grew a ton, and I hope that you join us for this year and help us grow as well. So if you get a chance, do me a favor, leave a review on Apple, Spotify, Audible, wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast. I would really appreciate it. Let's get to the show. Awesome. So today we've got Aaron Brashear. Aaron, how are you? Thanks for coming on here with me.
I'm doing good. Doing good.
All right. So you've been in the design field for a while.
Yeah, to say the least.
So just a quick rundown. NFL, NHL, CBX, Siegel and Gale, Colgate-Palmolive. You've been a hired gun for years, and you're also teaching. You also take the time to teach at Parsons and FIT. Mm-hmm. When I jumped on your LinkedIn this morning, it asked to rate you on certain things. And the one thing that kind of stood out at the very top was, if Work Express was one of your top skills. So, when was the last time you opened up Work Express?
Oh, geez. I think the last time that I actually had to get it, actually had to purchase a copy, and it showed up on a CD to install it. I have conversations with professionals, obviously of similar ages, but also with my students, and try to explain it because they obviously are only in the Adobe world, and to say, yeah, there's this other application that worked really well, but there was no compatibility with anything else whatsoever, and like that was the go-to product, but they're just looking at me like I'm crazy. So but that's the way it is now. You've got essentially one software universe. How it even knows that I used Cork is more interesting.
Well, that's just it, right? Everything is on a cloud somewhere, you know, everything you've ever done. So but you're right. I remember when InDesign first came out, and at the very beginning you're kind of like, this is never going to work. You know, this is never going to take over Cork. It's just so lightweight. It's like maybe, you know, somebody making like a brochure for their neighborhood potluck will use this, but Cork Express is miles beyond.
Yeah. It's the Corel Draw of, of Macintosh. What I found funny when I knew that the kind of change was coming for InDesign was when I was having printers who refused to take InDesign files because they didn't want to pay for the software.
Right.
We would actually have to use a company called Marksware and convert our InDesign files back to Cork Express in order to send them to the printer. And when that stopped happening, it was like, okay, Cork's dead now. Yeah. And you have, you know, an industry driver that's now saying, okay, we're catching up with the times. Then that was kind of the death knell, so to speak, for it, I think.
Yeah. So I think that kind of leads to the conversation I'd like to have today, which is really around design education and sort of the future of design education, right? If we look back to where we were when InDesign first got introduced, we were at the precipice of the future of design, what our future was going to be. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing today that you can see is shifting how design is going to be, not just produced, created, but just the way that people are thinking about design in general?
I think that what I'm seeing, personally seeing, and then also responding to, is the more and more we kind of are disconnected, for lack of a better term, especially with COVID and the pandemic, the past two and some odd years, I'm seeing more connectivity come through and more collaboration. And that's both through software. You look at what Adobe's doing by buying Workfront and kind of changing the paradigm there, where you're not necessarily going to be using other workflow or work automation products once they fully integrate that, but also just the collaborative spirit of people wanting to say, you know what, I'm not an individual designer working in a bubble, you know, in my home office at home. I'm still wanting to collaborate with folks like I might have done in a traditional studio environment. And so finding the tools for that type of collaboration are really, really important. And, you know, we didn't have, you know, back when I started, you know, communication tools like, you know, Slack, there obviously was not the internet. And now I'm really dating myself. You know, you didn't have software packages that were fully integrated that you could go from one app to another app to another app. And I think that changes how people work. They work very fast. And I think as an educator, part of what I try to help them do is they can work as fast or as slow as they want to. I want to make them work as smart as they can. And that's both from a conceptual ideation standpoint, but then also from an execution standpoint. So it's like, you know, how can we use the tools? Because at the end of the day, that's what your computer is, to be able to take these subjective ideas that you have, you know, that when you're reacting to an assignment or you're reacting to a brief, and objectively execute them in a way that's simple and smart and does the best form of communication. It's interesting to see young designers now really embracing iPads and tablets rather than sketchbooks, and just the amount of work that they're doing on them, and then, you know, turning around and exporting the software and pulling in Illustrator. I'm like, well, you could have done that in Illustrator. And they're like, no, I'd rather actually do it on my pad with a, you know, stylus and then bring it over because it's more natural for them. So in some ways, maybe we're taking a good step backwards in the sense of being more handcrafted, where I think some of that automation that's happened over the past 10 years, you know, especially going into digital design, I think we lost a little bit of that creative spark that came from putting pencil to paper.
I don't know, as you're talking about the designers, you know, using iPads and pushing art into other software, I go back to when it was critical that you learned how to set up your files and production, like having everything be production ready was so critical, making sure everything is four color process, making sure you've included your fonts or outlined your fonts, like all these little details. You know, make sure that your black is either a rich black or 100% black, and how to do all of those different things was just an important part of being a designer. But if I think about today, where you're saying, you know, designers are using iPads and new tools and kind of just pushing everything like super digital, is it still important that designers learn all of those production skills, or is that just me being old, thinking I had to learn it this way, so you've got to learn it this way?
Well, it's interesting because I just finished up my last class for this fall semester with FIT, and I'm in specifically the packaging design department. And within the packaging design department, they have some very prescribed ways of teaching strategy and ideation and how to work most efficiently, both from a creative standpoint and also from an executional standpoint in packaging. And I was asked to teach this class, which is essentially a digital production class on talking about the creation of mechanicals, what goes on in the implementation process. So we start the class off with, okay, I've got this beautiful rendering of a PDP of whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. How do I get this to market? And to talk about those steps, and then to go into detail about print production, actual mechanical creation of files that they are creating for another class, best practices, and then stepping out of that a little bit to talk about like implementation. I spent a lot of time on printing techniques and print sustainability. I mean, FIT also has separate classes on sustainability, so we really only touch on it. But by the end of the semester, the school's hope and my hope is I've made them not only a little bit dangerous, you know, and some students really embrace the idea of, wow, I never thought about setting my files up this way. But the whole idea of, as you're designing, are there things that you can do to make the production process easier? A, because you may be doing it yourself if you're in a small shop. B, you're going to be handing this file off to somebody, and how much do you want to explain to them? Or can they open the file up and see, oh, the layers are set up and named properly. All the swatches I have here are named properly. Special finishes are pulled out into, you know, individual layers. And so I do bring some of my past as, like, you know, doing paste up and being at that transitional time between traditional production and then digital production. And just talk about the evolution that's happened over the past 20 or 30 years. And then looking back, I always show a great documentary called Graphic Means, which is the history of production design over the years. And it kind of starts, like, funny enough, back in Gutenberg, and gets all the way up to, I believe it was produced somewhere around 2015, up to that, you know, and they, you know, interview some top-notch designers who, again, are of the age where they had to kind of straddle both worlds, and just talk about the evolution, like, has it hurt or has it helped? And I think that's the big question, is the sense of craft that I think maybe you might be referring to, and having to have such specific skill sets to execute, is something that FIT feels is important that these students understand and hopefully embrace.
I geek out on production. I mean, I love production, just being at manufacturing, being at the plant, you know, mixing inks, stripping, feeling like all the old school stuff. I just remember, and maybe what I remember most is, like, the camaraderie of being on press.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a great experience. What's next, right? I'm seeing a lot of digital, a lot of straight to digital, but I'm not seeing as many people as I thought embracing it, at least from my perspective on, like, the high end tech brands. But I'm seeing a lot of CPGs definitely taking to digital. You know, how do you train a student to dabble in both sides of that?
I think, again, give them enough knowledge to be dangerous and to start asking questions. And, like, some students immediately, you know, after class are like, where can I learn more? What are the resources you can give me for this? Others, it's kind of like, this is really interesting. I'm glad I'm understanding this. But, like, I get the question always after talking about print, like, what do you see coming up? And it's like, well, okay, who am I talking to? Who are my peers? What am I absorbing? And I think that, you know, besides having big discussions about sustainability and moves to make, quite frankly, package design a more sustainable industry, you know, I start off my class by saying, you know, in some ways, guys, you know, we're not real great for the planet right now, the way we're doing things. And it's kind of our jobs to think about how we can do better. But also then having conversations, like, you know, I sat in a really interesting webinar with SGS Co. and where they were talking about 5 years from now, the majority of work that they feel they're going to be doing is going to be direct to digital, and the cost savings, because it's finally going to be scalable, the size of the presses, how they're doing it. You look towards some of the new techniques of, you know, creating virtual die lines, whether that's done by robotic cutting techniques, or there was this really innovative company in Scotland that has perfected laser techniques where they're cutting all the dies out, you know, via laser. And so how do those technologies now play into the kind of speed to market? But I also think that there's part of the community that I think 10 years ago, when you had discussions of, like, you know, is print dead? And those of us who were loyal to it were like, no, it just becomes more of a commodity. You know, it's more of a special thing. I think that, especially to me, with the influencer and luxury market, they're seeing that as a plus side, that there's a craft that goes into creating, not only from a design standpoint, but from a fabrication standpoint.
Sure.
And there's a benefit to that, you know, to have that, you know, as you do the unboxing, so to speak, where you've got it in your hands and you're holding it and you're having that intimate experience with that packaging.
Yeah.
I still feel that there's a huge want for it and need for it And so that's another thing that we talk to designers about, is to, how can you enhance that experience?
Hey, I want to introduce you to IDPDirect.com. We recently won a Silver Pen Awards for collaborating on the future of sustainable packaging. If you want to work directly with the packaging manufacturer and you're tired of distributors and middlemen, check them out. Visit IDPDirect.com to learn more. Stay up to date with package design news. Join me, Evelio Matos, Corey Connors, and Adam Peake every Monday at 7:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on LinkedIn Live for the package design news. 15 minutes of the latest in packaging news. See you there.
Check out SpecRite, the number one platform for specification management. Not sure what board your box uses? Not sure how many colors or how much headspace your packaging requires? If you don't SpecRite, you'll guess wrong. SpecRite.com.
To be completely honest, coming in spring, I'll be teaching a class at ASU on packaging. Mm-hmm. It's basically, here's a blank slate. Here are the students that are coming in. They're coming from all these different lanes of study. What do I feel is most important for them to leave with? Mm-hmm. There's just so much. And I think it's for me, when I look at it, I even step away from packaging. Mm-hmm. What's important to me is that a student graduate and be able to get a job. Like, that's important. Your work is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. How you work is a big part of that also. And I kind of look at the way that I would hire in the past, what I would look for in portfolios. So portfolios, I'd want to see sketches. I'd want to see production work. Like, if somebody showed me, oh yeah, here's how I set up my file. Like, it would just be mind blowing, right? Or if I said, hey, let me see how you set up that file, and they open it up and there's like 1,000 layers. You're like, oh my God. All these little things help in terms of getting work, but obviously being a talented designer is really important.
Sure.
I was at MSU and I was doing a keynote presentation there, and I had two, I think it was one on one day and then one on the follow-up day. And on the first day I said, you know, at the very end, I'm like, you guys should take a look at these people on social media, look at this person on Instagram, look at this person on LinkedIn. And then I got all these blank stares and I just stopped. And I'm like, how many of you are on Instagram? Like, just raise your hand. Mm-hmm. And obviously this is packaging engineering, which is a different group of people, but I think like two people out of like 200 people raised their hands. And I'm like, how many of you are on LinkedIn? And nobody had raised their hand. And I'm like, so you're going to graduate in less than 2 months and nobody knows who you are yet. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to come out into the market and say, all right, I'm done. Now I want to get started. And it's kind of like the same thing when you're launching a startup. You don't want to do all this work and all of a sudden I've got a product on Monday. Now I've got to find customers. Like, you've got to build up those customers before you even launch a product. So I feel like it's really important just that students even understand how to communicate on social media. Yeah. And I want to make sure that, you know, anybody that even goes through my class, by the time they come out, they understand, here's how I'm going to get a job. I want them to document, you know, everything from like day one to the last day and start sharing that information, right? I want them to document the conversations that we're having. I want them to document the sketching that they're going to be doing, the prototyping. I want them to document when they fail at something, right? When they create a box that destroys the product inside or just doesn't work. Because I think it's important that people start sharing their work. Mm-hmm. They can start reaching out to, if they want to work at agency X or brand X, they can start tagging them in their feed and saying, you know, this is what I'm doing. You know, what do you think of this? And creating that dialogue. Because I think it's really important for students to capitalize on all these tools that they've got available that were never available to us. I mean, you didn't know anybody at an agency until you actually got out and knocked on the door and said, I'm leaving my portfolio here. I'll come back in 3 days to pick it up.
Yeah.
You know, so those are like some of the things that I'm looking at incorporating, not just on the design side, but just in like this networking that just, I don't see it happening at very many schools.
Yeah, it's interesting because not as much at Parsons. Obviously any school, whether it be a design school or, a city college or a state college, you build a network amongst your friends. And how tight is that when you leave, you know, the learning experience? What I find interesting in certain programs, and I'll use FIT or Syracuse or some of the design schools with very dedicated study programs into you want to be a packaging designer. This isn't a general design discussion. Yes, you're going to get best practices that could be applied to other fields, but we're really going to hone in on what you're doing for packaging.
Yeah.
And to have a conversation yesterday, so the last class, especially for the seniors, because they're going into their final semester, I do a, okay, guest speaker, which was great, somebody in the field. And then, you know, this past week, I asked each of you to ask me a question, post it to a form, you know, Google form, and to go through them. And I don't necessarily do repetitive questions. We kept getting this, how do I network? How do I, you know, find that first job? How do I know people, you know, places that I want to work at? And my answer to them was, there's 23 students in this room. This is your network right now. This is the start of it. And I'm your network. And your professors that are here are your network. And then we look at the greater FIT community is your network outside. And that's outside of any other, you know, design community. And to take advantage of that. So yeah, I have the LinkedIn discussion. I have, you know, sharing your work on Instagram. FIT is really, really good about them keeping an online presence, because the reality is, which you just alluded to, it used to be you graduated, you had your portfolio, whether it's digital or, you know, physical back then, and now it's digital. And, you know, it's like, hey world, I'm here. But if no one's listening, then, right, you know, they don't know that. What I found really interesting during COVID is that FIT traditionally has a physical portfolio, you know, day or evening normally, where professionals are invited to come look at the portfolios. They are a combination of digital and actually published pieces and comps and everything that they've made on their projects, you know, with the hope that you'll land additional internships or whatever else. They went fully digital, obviously, because of COVID, and ended up having much more exposure to the rest of the world because they couldn't see them any other way. And so you're now getting, rather than say maybe 50 people or 100 people or whatever showing up to this event, you've got a professor like me, say, posting about it on LinkedIn, and suddenly they're getting 5,000 people are looking right at their work. So that was a really neat evolution. And I think I agree with you 100% about making sure that they're taking advantage of the technology, not only to document and learn from it, but also to kind of further their careers before their career starts. You know, I think a lot of that also is encouraging. Now, again, if you're talking with people in their senior year, they probably have already had internship programs. The program that they're in may require them to do so, you know, for that type of exposure. But, you know, preparing them to take that very scary step sometimes. The packaging community, I feel like, is small enough within the creative community that there's kind of some built-in support there for folks who really want to, you know, shine in their trade. But it's still scary. I'm still looking at people in the room and they're just like, geez, you know, in 4 months, I'm out there. I have my internship lined up, but I don't know what it's going to be. And, you know, the anxiety that goes along with all of that. And, you know, if we're as professionals, especially those who, like yourself, who communicate so much on social media and are able to expose ideas and trends and everything like that, being able to tap somebody and say, hey, you know,
sure,
you know, look at what I'm doing. Look at what, you know, Vanner Media does. Look at what, you know, these different platforms are exposing. You can take advantage of this just in some ways by emulating what some of these folks are doing.
It's an amazing tool in education, really just in life, but just in education alone. When I think back to coming out of school and then all of a sudden starting to knock on doors, it's like, yeah, you're starting from zero. Mm-hmm. Today, you're already at one. Now it's just a matter of going to two. What are the top three things that you want your packaging design students to graduate with? What are you really looking for?
I think an understanding of process. And granted, every program teaches process a little bit differently. I mean, there are some universal kind of learning outcomes that programs want to see. But to, you know, really have students own their projects. So what are you doing for your research? What are you doing when you're talking about strategy? What are you doing? This is before any ideation is done whatsoever. You know, how are you collaborating with the other people that you're with. And a lot of times there are group projects or there's working groups. So they have, you know, people to bounce ideas off of as they're working on this, so that when you begin to execute, you've already started to formulate what is going to react well to the brand. Because at that point, then packaging, print, digital, like, you know, a physical product, if you've done your research and you're owning the idea of that, you can apply it to anything within design, in my opinion. And, you know, again, depending on how specific a program is, they can really push that and say, you know, hey, we're going to work on this, you know, spirits project. You're going to, you know, your group is going to pick a specific, you know, spirit that you want to do. You're going to do your research into it, your backstory and everything. And then we're going to pick our market that we're going after. And like, you know, as always, everybody does, we're going either after Gen Z or millennials. And, you know, what's the research that goes behind that, so that it's not just ideation. And that's like the real difference between departments, say between Parsons and FIT. FIT comes down to, there is ideation and process, but then there's also a practicality to how we go about doing them, where Parsons is a bit more heady and a bit more ideation and learning outcomes that may or may not apply to a specific skill set. So it's kind of interesting to teach at both places, because you kind of apply different ways of thinking depending on, you know, the packaging class.
Sure. So what is the difference between, you know, your class at FIT and the class at Parsons? Are they essentially the same class, you're teaching them different methods, or they are completely different classes?
They're completely different classes. So So this is my third year at FIT. I've been teaching at Parsons for 16 years. So, and that has covered communication design, print design, and then now it's a class called product promotion and packaging. So we're talking about kind of the whole thing, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
At FIT, I am teaching seniors who are going out into the world real quick. And so there are certain skill sets that I feel and the school feels that they need to have, like, now. Like, if you don't have them now, this is the time for us to drill this into you, that you have these understandings. Where at Parsons, I'm having second semester freshmen. This is their first elective that they can actually take, and it's open to the entire school. So the neat thing here is, I may have somebody who wants to go into packaging design, but I also have an architecture major. I have a communication design major, a product design major. I might have somebody in fine arts that wants to come take the program. And so we can really have this kind of fun collective experimentation. And we use packaging, or I use packaging as that medium. I could apply this to something else if I needed to.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's nice because they can play with form and the function of that form. And I think in some ways that helps them understand the ideation process as they kind of move up from their freshman year.
I think it's super interesting that you're at both these schools teaching completely different programs, mm-hmm. and you've got a whole different type of student at each. What's the software that you're promoting? Essentially, what do you want these students to be using? Is it the Adobe Suite, you know, the SolidWorks, the RDOS? Like, how technical do you think it's important?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough to get overly technical because of the constraints of software. Like, Adobe obviously has made it very easy. First of all, they probably have a free subscription through the college while they're in school, so they're not even paying for it. But once they're out of school, the gateway to using those applications as an individual person is very low, where it used to be very high, obviously. But, you know, it's going to depend for me on the industry that we're talking about. Obviously, within the packaging industry, we're heavily reliant on Adobe Illustrator and then obviously Photoshop, and using those to kind of craft. InDesign, not so much. I think there's a certain level of proficiency that you need to start, and then each student then kind of learns at their own rate. It's interesting though to see some of the, you know, newer apps that have been developed, and Adobe has done this as well, for the iPad and for tablets, where you're almost simulating aspects of Photoshop and Illustrator in them. so that I think if you have a student that has, prior to coming to Parsons, prior even to coming to FIT, is able to kind of embrace that technology in one form, it becomes very easy for them to embrace what is an industry, you know, level technology with the Adobe products. I wish we could play around with some of the stuff that ESCO has out there, or SolidWorks or whatever. Their Studio Plus is a fantastic piece of software. It unfortunately at, you know, 200 plus a month, license is rather hard to swallow even on a, you know, professional level. So I actually show it, not in my Parsons class, my FIT class, we actually do go through some of those more technical software packages and review mm-hmm. them, but you know, I'm not able to actually physically teach with them currently. So
sure. We'll see. So if you're from ESCO and you're listening to this, get with Aaron and get some software in the hands of those students. And yeah. You may as well throw in a Kongsberg table, you know, you may as well. Why
not? it's going to be interesting though that you bring up ESCO. It's going to be very interesting though to see how some of the software that students may embrace when they're out in the field, especially if they end up in production design. So looking at Automation Engine and looking at, Web Center, looking at like Loftware and some of the workflow technologies are out there. I think, and this leads back maybe to one of your earlier questions, there's going to be a huge paradigm shift in the next couple of years. Adobe is, from the looks of it, is saying, you know what? It's nice to have partnered with all you guys over the years. We don't need you anymore. We're going to do our own thing. And like the Pantone article that you posted today on LinkedIn was very much that. And I think there is some concern within the ESCOs and the Pantones and the X-Rates that are really good Adobe partners right now, that Adobe is eventually going to muscle them out. And what can they do to make themselves also, standalones, I guess. So you're seeing a lot of moves to, you know, SaaS platforms, where before it was this very old school, you know, IT solution, enterprise solution. So it'll be interesting to see how students are adapting to that kind of that new realm as well.
Yeah.
Hey, PDU crew, I want you to go to diecuttemplates.com/unboxed, UNBOXD, right now. And the reason is because I know how difficult it is to create die lines, how time consuming it is to do it in Illustrator. And if you don't have tens of thousands of dollars to be using other programs, and all you want to do is get to the packaging design, diecuttemplates.com/unboxed is the right solution. Over 700 die lines. Type in your dimensions, your material weight. If you want to add locks, if you want to add windows, any type of construction you're looking for, they've got it, and you can customize it to your needs. Check out diecuttemplates.com/unboxed, UNBOXD, and let me know what you think.
Absolutely. And it's funny because, like, you know, Adobe is really taking that Amazon model, right? Where mm-hmm. Amazon sort of owns everything. And if you've got a great product out there, they're going to come up with their own brand version of it, right? They're Amazon Basics. They're, you know, all these different things. Adobe's finally taken that model as well. It's like, all right, everybody's using this and it's proven. We're going to go ahead and start doing this. Cause I, you know, when you look at some of the 3D stuff that they're incorporating mm-hmm. into their packaging, you know, into their Illustrator package, it's insane. You know, 10 years ago, you would never think that this would be happening. But now it's just every day, you know, you're creating 3D products with Adobe, which is insane.
Yeah, and I think when they are able to really put some muscle behind Adobe Dimension, and it's got great integration right now within their suite, but to make it more agile, and maybe that's using some cloud computing or something so that you can render faster, I think that's going to be a big disruptor too in the industry. Because again, you've got, for whatever, $70 a month, I've got everything I need. I've got all the fonts I need. I've got access to stock. I've got all these design programs. I've got a 3D, you know, design and rendering program. I don't necessarily need to use Studio Plus anymore, or Rhino, or, you know, go out and do this. I don't really need to go out and, you know, get a license, you know, for my company to work with Web Center or one of the other workflow solutions that are out there, because it's all in one box. It's also kind of scary because, you know, when you have such a corner on the market, you don't necessarily have choice. Well, we've been there with Apple. So, you know, innovation, I guess, needs to be tempered by, you know, the people who are using it. So we'll see.
Yeah. No, that's super, super interesting for me because I'm actually going the opposite way. Mm-hmm. I am personally trying to work less in Adobe products and really only work in Procreate. Mm-hmm. Like that's pretty much it. Is, you know, my work is concept development. So I just sketch everything out. You know, I can animate in there. I can throw some general textures in there. But my goal is here are the concepts. Here are the way that, you know, here's a few different options that I see how your pack can unbox mm-hmm. some different materials I would suggest for the different processes. And then handing that over to either an agency or a manufacturer, because on the manufacturer side, they're going to have all the RDOS, all the software they need to actually implement that. And they'll have an engineering team to make sure that, you know, everything is precise. Mm-hmm. If I'm working with an agency, they have all the graphics teams to be able to image everything up and do all that process. They just might not have structure internally. Which is what mm-hmm. I found a lot of times is a lot of agencies don't have structural designers on hand because there's not enough workflow for them. So for me, it's like I see everything that's happening in Adobe. And I'm like, man, that's such cool stuff in there. But I don't know how to use half that stuff anymore. Yeah. It's like I'm so far removed because I've just niched down so tight into just this concept development. Mm-hmm. So how does your program teach concept development and in that innovation, like in that ideation stage?
Again, I go back to the process discussion. And I think, you know, I hope so many design professors are able to say, you know what, a lot of what we're going to do is fail. Like we're going to do things that don't work for one reason or another. We're going to pursue ideas that aren't necessarily going to come to fruition. And how do you learn from those failures so that the next time around, when we're ideating, we're thinking maybe a little differently, or we're thinking smarter, or we're not getting caught up in one portion of it? I think a lot of times, one of two things happens. You have a student who is awesome at ideation execution, meaning they're right out of the gate, 2 days later, the assignment's not due for 2 weeks, in 2 days, they've got it all thought out, rendered, done everything. And to that student, I have to say, whoa, like this is fantastic that you are thinking this way from the beginning of the project. But I want you to take a step back and think about, let's talk about doing things in phases or doing things incrementally so that we can analyze kind of where we're at in the project. And that's very, very much a, you know, studio agency way of kind of doing things versus, you know, like a scrum master and a sprint that would go on with a digital team or a strategy team. I also though have the students that get caught up in the ideation phase where they are so concerned about getting the idea 100% correct before they make that next move that they trip over themselves when it comes to execution. And so both of those kind of skill sets, part of the, especially in the Parsons class, is to get them to think, okay, where am I failing or where am I making mistakes? And it's not a bad mistake, it's a good mistake because we're learning about it. And how do I improve upon it? Whether that's taking more time to develop my idea so that it's sound and actually is executable, or whether it's saying, you know what, you've got your idea down, put it in the drawer, you know, or put it in the closet or whatever you do in, you know, an envelope, and let's move on to the next phase. We can always come back to it. And I think that's one of those critical thinking learning outcomes that both schools are looking to kind of, you know, embed into the design process of the students. It's almost, you know, it's very much there with seniors at FIT, obviously, and it is very, very rough at Parsons with second semester freshmen. So it's kind of fun playing on both sides of that.
What do you see being the major change happening between now and 2025 when it comes to packaging? Is it sustainability? Is it automation? What do you think?
I think there's going to be a bunch of stuff that's going on. I mean, you've gotten packaging firms, I don't want to say that they were ever dumb, but smarter about either working with their partners to say, what can we do for this brand to make it more sustainable, or to, you know, or how can we help them, you know, improve the speed to market, and thinking strategically that way rather than just creatively. I mean, it's part of the creative process, but it's, I've always seen, at least in my experience, that type of implementation discussions tend to happen after the designs have been approved. I love the idea of, you know, what Brandi Parker at Pearl Fisher is doing and their approach of, you know what, we're going to have the discussions up front, you know, and in some cases, I just worked there for a very short time. In some cases, having those discussions before we ever put pencil to paper, or we push a pixel, you know, and have that built into the process. So I think that's one thing. You know, speed to market, we talked about digital printing earlier. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a huge improvement. And having not just students, but, you know, younger designers and older designers understand how that's going to change. You know, the fact that I don't need to go on press for a job that's going to take 4 days to print because of the finishes and everything that we're doing, and because it's a work and turn, and, you know, it has to come off the press. It's all done digitally. It's done two-sided. And by the way, I can do 5 SKUs at the same time, you know, with variable data and all this different stuff that I couldn't do before. The last thing, and it's a big discussion I'm having with some of my peers, especially those who have been in the industry for a while, and who have mostly freelanced, is I don't know that we're going back to the, you know, someone comes in as a junior designer and works their way up within the environment, you know, to a senior level, or, you know, jumps from one agency to another. I think that you're going to have more generalists that, as you just said, like, bring me in to do this ideation of the project. Great. Here you go. See you later. Part of what, you know, Gene, he alluded to in my class yesterday, the conversations that Gene Portnoy and I have, is setting up a model where you will bring a specialized team. And maybe that's a creative director, a senior designer, and an illustrator, or a typographer. They will come in and bang out stuff from an ideation standpoint for a couple of weeks, and then hand the project back to the agency or the studio to say, you've got great people. They can do execution. They can do the adaptive design or the implementation. We don't need to be those people. So here's the baby, you know, see you later. We're going to go on to the next thing. It just seems to me that that's like, especially with, you know, so many studios either closing their doors and going completely virtual, or, you know, I think evolving to a real hybrid model, it's going to be much easier to integrate that kind of, it's not even freelance. It's more like a, you know, you're hiring, you know, the designer who acts more like you would hire an illustrator or a typographer. It's very much project-based. And, you know, that person then gets to move on and gets moved to another brand. And, you know, maybe they specialize in something. Maybe they're, you know, a generalist that can work in all kinds of mediums. So it's going to be, that to me is a really interesting, you know, evolution. It'll be interesting to see. I currently work at Tula Skincare. We have a very tiny packaging team, great people. And I came in, you know, thinking that I would be working on one specific project. And the nice thing is that specific project got much larger. And, you know, I'll be there for a while, possibly permanently down the road, who knows. But, you know, there have been projects that I've come in, it was the intention from day one that I was only there for a limited amount of time to do a specific function. And I think that is evolving, you know, with design teams. And that is going to be a critical thing to be able to navigate, to teach to students, is to say, how do you as a young designer navigate this new paradigm of post-COVID, you know, virtual agencies, you know, things like, which, you know, or I won't go into it, but it's a whole nother discussion, but, you know, websites like Fiverr, and, you know, the way the digital realm has changed the design business in general. But, and, you know, and I say that, and we talk about what innovations could happen in 5 years, everything I just said could be absolute BS in 6 months, because you know, who knows these days anymore? So it's going to be interesting. And, you know, I know I will continue to have conversations with people like yourself, people like Gene, who I brought up, to see, as, you know, the more experienced elder statesman, so to speak, I'll use elder states for myself, I'll you in there, how we can react, and we will probably react obviously more slowly than somebody who's 18 years old or 19 or 20 or 21, but how we can react and then be able to mentor and nurture the younger designers as they're, you know, coming in. Another one of the questions that we had was, everybody this year is, how do I freelance? 3 years ago, it was, how do I get a job, a full-time position?
And, so, but you're the guy to answer it.
Yeah.
So, right. Cause you've been a hired gun for quite a while.
Yeah.
So how do you, all right, so let's answer that. How do you freelance? What's the answer to that? How does somebody in packaging become a freelance packaging designer?
I think it tends to be more opportunity than anything else. I got a chance back in, I had done packaging for my own projects. I had my own company for 13 years. But it was very limited. It wasn't a lot of CPG. It was a lot of specialty packaging for music. And well, of course we know where that went. And I got the opportunity after we closed our shop in 2013 to come in and work at CBX. And, you know, Joe Violante, quite frankly, you know, did a favor to a friend and, you know, let's have this guy come in and see what he can do. And that kind of set me up to where every time I flexed from a freelance position to a full-time job, I kept going back to the, you know, there's lots of things about freelancing that can suck, you know, inconsistent work schedule, you know, payment. You're not necessarily doing a 9-to-5. It's not necessarily a 40-hour week. Maybe it's 20 this week and, you know, 60 the next. But you get to touch so many brands. And that has really been the reason that I have stayed freelance for the majority of the past 10 years, is I'm able to go to a shop like CBX and touch 10 different brands, work on the, you know, the, you know, global rebranding of Clorox. You know, that's fantastic. I would never have been able to do that before. And then 6 months later, I'm at Pearl Fisher working on private label launch and doing guidelines and implementation for them. It also allows me to pop around a bit to where I've done a lot of beauty and skincare work the past couple of years. Because, sure, you know, folks look at my portfolio and they're like, skincare, and then there's bleach. Like, what's going on here? Yeah. And the conversation I can have to them is, I'm a generalist. I have a you know, all of this experience that is supported in production and implementation. And I have always felt like, you know, if I can't do it, I can learn and then I can do it. Or you're doing it one way, I've done it another. Is there a better way for me to do it for you? And that's been kind of the cool thing, is that, you know, I have no issue with somebody saying, okay, so tomorrow, dog food, we're going to be repackaging this whole thing. And it's like, no problem. I've done dog food before, you know, and then be able 2 weeks later to turn around and work on skincare. That will be the thing that I wonder if agencies and in-house groups are able to embrace as well, with the post-COVID era, is being comfortable, you know, with somebody who is a generalist. You know, it's always the joke that, like, oh, I want to work in spirits and high-end, you know, packaging like that. Do you have experience in spirits and high-end packaging? No. Well, you can't work in spirits and high-end packaging until you have the experience to do that. And so you get in that loop. You know, that is the nice thing, though, about programs like FIT, where they really help the students curate their internships. So if there is a real want to do CPG or to do skincare and beauty, they're able to really help them get in for those internships, so they get that entry level exposure.
So, yeah, you know, as you're talking about this, it's funny, because, like, my focus is concept development. Mm-hmm. Right, it's basically taking these random ideas out of thin air that I've either experienced or I've seen or something, and pulling them and kind of combining them to create, like, a new baby, essentially. Mm-hmm. Right. As you're talking about this, I'm doing the same thing. you know, as you're talking about this, I'm doing the same thing. I'm listening. I'm seeing an opportunity here where, you know, the agency model changes completely. Mm-hmm. You know, you brought up Fiverr. Yeah, there's people that have issues with it, people that make a living off of it. But I mean, that may be a stepping stone into what the next agency looks like. Mm-hmm. Because I can see an agency really where you're right, you would plug and play different groups of people. Mm-hmm. But there's kind of a need for there's a need to identify somebody that can do production, somebody that can do concept development of beauty products, somebody that can do graphics, somebody that can, you know, direct the entire program. And, you know, is that what the agency model looks like moving forward, where it's client comes in and then you are picking and choosing, here's the team that I'm assembling mm-hmm. specifically for this. And then where does that person pull these people from? It almost seems like there needs to be a marketplace for these teams. You know, are you a beauty brand? Here are three teams that make sense for you. Maybe they're different experience levels, geography, or some kind of combination of that mm-hmm. that makes sense. Just always thinking of like how things are going to change and what's kind of the next step. So that kind of just popped into my head in terms of like what would make sense.
Well, it's interesting because I did a project that was much more of a consultant. It was a CX project for a group called Protivity, and they do just that. They have a network of freelancers and contract people. They have a small core of full-time people who are kind of directing everything. And when they have a need, when a client says, here's the type of project we want to do, they're able to say, okay, I'm going to tap Aaron, I'm going to tap Mary, I'm going to tap Bob. Their skill sets will work really well in this project. They've worked together before. You know, I have my tried and true, you know, either project manager or creative director that I know knows this client and can direct them. And let's go and execute. And in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, in my case, it was, I guess, 3.5-4 months, you know, we're going to set milestones like you would with any project. We're going to send an end date like you would with any project. We will extend if we need to, like with any project.
Yeah.
But we're gonna come in, you know, like, you know, the squad of people help you out and then leave. You don't have that overhead.
Right.
You know, you can be agile, and we can help you be that way. And I think that's going to be another thing that comes out of that, and who can take advantage of it. Is it big websites? Is it a, you know, a working, not working type of website? Right. You know, is it, if you look at the model of TopTal, which does kind of like global digital development, they've got people all over the world mm-hmm. Working together in teams. Is it a single company or is it a single platform? Like, is there a social media platform that's going to come up for designers, which I think is what Working Not Working wants to truly be.
Sure.
And then how do you monetize that as well, if you're the provider of that exposure to these folks?
Yeah. And you bring up monetization. So mm-hmm. let's talk back to students. When a student graduates, whatever student's listening to this, mm-hmm. once you graduate, what is the rate that they should request for, like, say, a freelance project? Because I think this question a lot, where people are like, "Oh, I'm doing an entire packaging program for brand X, and I'm charging them $500."
Yeah.
Or they're like, I'll get a text from a student. They're like, "Hey, I've got an opportunity to work on this project, and I believe it should be about $50,000." I'm like, "Well, it's like you got two ends of the spectrum, but yeah. I don't know how much conversation happens around billing and like the business side of it and actually charging and being confident in what you're charging as a young designer. Like, what would your rate be? What would you tell one of your students? What's your rate when you graduate?"
That's a good question, because I got asked that yesterday. And my answer is, I don't have an answer for you, because it's who's the agency, what's the project, how much do you want to work on the project? You know, like, how little or more are you going to take? Have you done your research? So have you looked at, you know, online models that are saying, okay, for a junior designer in New York City, here's our range, you know, whatever I'm saying, you know, 25 to 45 or something like that. And I feel comfortable at 30, let's just say, or whatever the number is.
Sure.
But I also have conversations with them about doing your research to understand the studio, because, you know, one of the students came up to me and he's like, you know, I may start doing some freelancing, you know, after I graduate, you know, what's a typical work week? And I said, like, oh, dude, that's different for everybody, you know, but some of the things to look out for, or, you know, asking questions about the number of hours, asking questions about, you know, when, you know, when you're getting compensated and paid, asking questions about whether you can show your work, you know, after the fact, you know, those types of things that it become a challenge for, I think, young freelancers. You know, but again, it's so hard for me to be able to say, here is the rate you should be charging, because that rate changes. We do talk about, you know, my opinion of not doing spec work. It is one thing to, you know, choose to, I don't know what you would call it, do a test project, or to do projects on your own that are related to a specific, you know, industry, and showcase those and say, well, here, this isn't real, but I did this work and here's my thinking, and, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, your abilities as a designer have worth. They have even more worth because you just spent all this money on college, you know, whether it's yours or your parents or loans, but, you know, you need to be able to say comfortably, I can make a living doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, again, if the program is focused on getting the students exposure and experience prior to going, you know, graduating, they are going to get some of that. Okay, I know what my self-worth, I know what my worth is, and what I can charge for myself at an agency because I've worked there, you know, for 6 months or something like that.
Awesome, man. So what's a great place for people to contact you? Should they reach out to you on LinkedIn? Where should they find you?
LinkedIn is probably the best. I mean, certainly you can hit me up at AaronBrashearDesign.com, but I have a lot of work up and around and not really one centralized source. So my LinkedIn profile is the best way to get to me.
Excellent. So if anybody's looking for a freelance packaging designer that has a vast knowledge and a ton of experience, then Aaron, I mean, you're the guy.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you taking the time for this today.
No, thanks for having me on. I've wanted to chat with you for a while, so this has been great.
PDU crew, thank you so much for listening. Once again, do me a favor, please go rate, review the podcast wherever you listen to the podcast. I really appreciate it. It helps us grow. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk soon.